Welcome to Let's Talk Loyalty, an industry podcast for loyalty marketing professionals. I'm Paula Thomas, the founder and CEO of Let's Talk Loyalty and also Loyalty TV. If you work in loyalty marketing, you can watch our video interviews every Thursday on www.loyalty.tv. And of course, you can listen to our podcasts every Tuesday, every Wednesday, and every Thursday to learn the latest ideas from loyalty experts around the world. Today's episode is part of the Wiser Loyalty series, which is hosted by our partners, the Wise Marketeer Group. The Wise Marketeer Group is a media, education, and advisory services company, providing resources for loyalty marketeers through the Wise Marketeer digital publication and the Loyalty Academy program that offers the Certified Loyalty Marketing Professional, or CLMP, designation. I hope you enjoy this weekly podcast, the Wiser Loyalty series, brought to you by Let's Talk Loyalty and the Wise Marketeer Group. Just before we share today's episode, I want to ask you to sign up to the Let's Talk Loyalty email newsletter. Our email newsletter is by far the best way for us to keep you up to date with all of the latest incredible loyalty stories we're sharing each week. It's also the easiest place for you to find our show notes, with links to everything mentioned in all of the episodes. You can sign up at letstalkloyalty.com.
Hi, I'm Aaron Daphne, CMO of the Wise Marketer Group and one of the two hosts of the Wiser Loyalty Marketing Series. I'm here today with my partner, Bill Hannafin, who's our CEO. Hi, Bill.
How you doing, Aaron?
Pretty good. Thanks for asking. It's been a while since we've been together, so it's nice to see you again. This is somewhat of a special episode for us since there are actual 5 weeks of the month in April, and we've been covering key success factors, one of our courses in the Loyalty Academy CLMP curriculum. And it's a bit by serendipity that we're going to be able to talk about this particular topic because we're adding new content to our courseware as we go through a bit of a refresh of the core curriculum over the next few months. And so today's topic will be a little bit around that kind of design. So I'm looking forward to the conversation. A little bit on us. We've both been on assignment recently. I was in Dubai at the Loyalty Connect Dubai conference and also at a client event. And Bill was at a client event in the US. And this is just literally last week. So we're doing this fairly current to the time period. And today we're going to do a bit of a recap on some of the constructs from those events last week. Just real quickly before we do that, for those of you tuning in for the first time, or simply as a reminder for those of you who come and follow us each week, this series introduces constructs from our Loyalty Academy course curriculum that we find interesting, and then we hope that listeners will become wiser on loyalty. Every month, we tend to tackle a construct from a new set of course curriculum, and throughout this month, we're talking about, as I mentioned already, key success factors for loyalty programs, which is course 112 of our curriculum. We won't be covering all of the content, obviously, for that course, but we'll cover off the four plus that have already happened in this special edition to round out thoughts for key success factors in April of this month. So without further ado, Bill, as I mentioned, it's been a few weeks since we've actually seen each other. And so I don't think we've actually spent this much time apart, have we, in a while? I don't know.
Actually, yeah, we've had a few time zones between us. But, you know, the interesting thing is when we compared notes before the episode, we ended up talking about kind of tangentially, at least the same topic, right? We were talking about kind of bringing loyalty up into the C-suite and then what concerns CEOs. I know you gave a talk in Dubai about what keeps CEOs up at night.
That's exactly right. So why don't we banter back and forth about those two things, and I'll let you go first since I did the intro today.
Yeah. You know, I think I told you I've been reading a book about excellence as a CEO, and it's interesting. I don't necessarily think you have to be a CEO to be interested in reading the book. It's a good business book for any business person, whatever your title, if you're leading a line of business or you're leading an entire company or something like that. But there was a lot in there about what were the common traits that CEOs had among them, and regardless of business. And I think one of the things that always comes to the top that I've noticed is focus. Like there's an uncanny ability and commitment to focus on behalf of the people that lead, and it's kind of going with that is that whole idea of being able to say no capably and without guilt, right? And we've talked about that a lot in our business. Is, you know, you can be pulled many ways, and with the with just the pressing needs of everything from clients to LinkedIn posts to having to get content out, you know, you can feel like you just can't say no to anything because you might miss out. And if you miss out, oh my gosh, I've fallen behind. So all those sort of things come to mind. And so it's interesting. So now think about, here we are in this customer loyalty business, and we're trying to connect with the CEOs that we're talking about, have this like overtasked, you know, the demands on their time is way beyond what you would consider reasonable for a normal human being. And then here we are trying to get them to pay attention to a customer loyalty initiative. And it's not the easiest thing to do at all. But I wanted to ask you, I think you focused on five, we don't have time to go into all of them, of course, but
no.
you focused into five general areas, like big buckets of things that would keep CEOs up at night. Do you want to just tell me what they were, and then maybe we can dig into one of them or something?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't coming at it a little bit slightly different in terms of my focus. I came at it from the perspective of there's a lot of things keeping CEOs up at night. I would say that the National Sleep Foundation, and that's out of the US, but it's relevant for anywhere in the world, says that the average adult gets about 7 hours of sleep in order to feel rested. Like, that's what they need. We've always been long told to like the importance of getting a good sleep. But for executives, it's just not in the cards, right? And CEOs, they aren't really that average, you know. So I've heard it not to be uncommon of like, even yourself as a CEO, maybe you know, four hours per night. Like it's pretty minute in terms of what they get. You know, whether it's focusing, as you said, on those day to day responsibilities or these larger scale, higher mind share type of ideas that they're really formulating around strategy and whatnot. And so, for me, the conversation really stemmed from actually talking about things that were top of mind for them. That came out of a McKinsey piece that was called What Matters Most, the 8 CEO Priorities for 2024. It was published in December 2023. And they published this report for a couple of years now, I think since like 2021. And it was, you know, top line things, you know, generally speaking, that kept people up. And you can think about them off the top of your head, you know, whether it's the fallout of the global pandemic and all the PTSD that we shouldn't laugh about that we all kind of have in some regard or some shape or form, busted supply chains and the impacts of those, the irritants, I guess, that come with stubborn inflation or just, you know, economic inconsistencies around the world. And I won't even get into any commentary around geopolitics in general that just are burgeoning up. But those are type of the things. And McKinsey had 8. But what I went into is I went into 5 of them that I thought that were a little bit more linked, stronger linkages into what we do in loyalty. And the first was around customers, which, you know, as we think about this bucket, it's about, you know, how do I acquire? How do I engage? How do I get them to advocate on my behalf of my brand? Innovations was the next one, which is really around product service design and enhancing experiences for my customers to make that stickiness to them much stronger. The third was revenue and growth, which is ultimately comes down to like, how do I make money? And talked a little bit more about the drive or the lean in, as you will, to getting to a profitable view of your customers. So it's not just enough to say how much money am I making from them, but now like how profitable are my customers? Because that's possible with the technology and the information that we have around customers today. Fifth, I'll go a bit out of order of what I think I did in Dubai. The fifth was people, which is employee retention and recruitment and overall satisfaction and wellness. You know, we know that loyalty plays a role there in terms of rising up both for our third-party vendors who are selling on our behalf, but also our own employees. Then the last but not least was market valuation, which I think some people would go, wait, how does loyalty connect to market valuation? And there's been a lot more conversation around that. And so the nuances of, you know, what are the things that loyalty can do, both, you know, little loyalty, like the programmatic elements, and large L loyalty, the more experiential, that can start to impact the valuation of a company. And so, I don't know, which one do you want to dive into? I think the market valuation might be the kind of one, but...
Market valuation grabs my attention. I'll tell you why. When I was very early in my consulting career, and I didn't have the classical training in consulting. I sort of picked it up as a second career. So I was learning from others as I was there. And I remember people saying, hey, nice presentation, but where's the money slide? Mm-hmm. Money slide. Oh, you mean the person who's sitting farthest in the back of the room, who's giving us the least amount of attention, who keeps asking where the executive summary is, also wants to know, why am I sitting here? where's the money? Like, what, why is this important to me? Because I have 14 other initiatives that people are asking me, you know, for budget support on, and show me the significance of this. And so it's really interesting to me because we've been able to show, and, you know, the best source of this information is probably in publicly disclosed information that you can, you do see quite a lot of companies that will disclose some attribution of loyalty program to profit or percentages of revenues or this, you know, the size of their customer universe that participates. There are lots of numbers there, but I think it's really key to be able to somehow distill everything that you're talking about in terms of strategy to a group of people and be able to demonstrate to the CEO why it's worth sitting through the meeting. Like this is, and so let me ask you before I throw it back to you, there's two things. Why is it worth it? But then, you know, there's this element of proof, which I've always noticed that there's attribution, because the first question that usually comes back, even if you say we're going to have $10 million net contribution margin from this program, then, you know, there's a question about attribution. Well, I've got three other really significant marketing initiatives going on right now. How do I know that all that really is attributable to the loyalty program? So it's challenging.
Well, I think it is challenging. I think that's where we trip ourselves up sometimes, is we start to get to, well, we have to attribute all of it. And the reality is, just knowing that some of it is attributable to the loyalty program and the efforts that are around it is where we need to land. For now, at least. Mm-hmm. And what we're seeing more and more is that Wall Street and then the other, you know, powers that be that drive economic value, or at least a market value for companies in the world, are starting to reward those companies that kind of have three things in mind, or at least two of them. And then the third one's a bit of a bogey, depending on what the end goal is for the business. The first is around being rewarded for knowing your customer valuable, you know, the repeatability, the right. Tenured elements of knowing a set of customers that have been around for a long time. And then, as I said, moving beyond just revenue into that level of profitability. And we can track that now through loyalty programs. I mean, it requires some of our finance team to readjust and make some and process changes. But the reality is that we can get down to that profit level on a customer if we so choose. It takes takes some work. I'm not trying to be light of the fact, but that is there are brands that are able to do that, and they're mm-hmm. being rewarded for that. The second one is really around data asset monetization, right? So we all know that data right. is a valuable resource, and being able to take that and start to utilize and make adjustments so that you can affect consumer behavior change positively for the brand, you know, is being rewarded as well too. And it's mm-hmm. not just a function of, you know, those who have a loyalty program that can do this. There's Big L Loyalty where some brands have that, but that data asset is still becoming a value to organizations, irrespective of whether they run a full-fledged traditional loyalty program or if they've got, you know, much more of a brand-esque type of view of this, where they're enacting the ways in which loyalty programs act upon, but using it from the data information perspective, and just they don't have a currency per se.
Right. So you know what? So in the meeting that I was in, as you were a couple time zones apart from me, there was a statement made that data should be the outcome of loyalty. You know, we always traditionally, obviously, we talk about behavior change, but we know a lot of companies that have built business cases around the data asset that they'll be building. So it's interesting just to tag on to what you were talking about.
Yeah, I think with the regulations that are coming into place and having that permission to be able to utilize that data, you know, otherwise, you know, you can't collect it if you don't have a real good reason as to why you're utilizing it anymore. In certain jurisdictions, it's not everywhere, but certainly that's probably the momentum that we see of where we'll end up. And then as individuals, consumers become much more savvy. I mean, they've already have come leaps and bounds in terms of the savviness of their data and the worth to brands. There's going to be a point in time where they probably come to a point that says, hey, I want to make sure that I know this and utilize this. And I start making concerted choices as to which brands get access to my data. We see this in Gen Z and the younger millennials of being very open because they've always known loyalty. They're willing to provide data to brands up until the point as which the brand doesn't provide them value back, and then they cut them off. They're very sharp and quick to do that. So, you know, it's one of those things where this data asset has a monetization, whether it's the front or the back is what you experienced. The point is that that there is some gold in that data asset. And then I guess the last thing I'll say here is just a question that we sparked. And this is not all of the reasons that loyalty programs are adding to market value. This is just some of them. The third one is a time-held truth in terms of some industries of, if you're building the actual program to be about CLTV or customer lifetime value, using an acronym that's never ideal, then that's one thing. But if you're also building it to be run its own P&L and eventually be spun off, we've seen some success stories with doing that, particularly in the airline and hospitality industries as a whole. And as you think about the new industries or the newer industries that are getting loyalty now, the hypothesis is, you know, at some point, if there's some economic downturn or stifleness in those particular sectors, and they have a full P&L and it's been built that way, could they spin it off to be its own unit and run independently while the business goes into maybe some bankruptcy and comes out to reform itself and reshape? I don't know. We've certainly seen that happen in, like I say, an airline and others. Could it happen in other sectors? It's just a hypothesis. But the point being that there is a path to a means to suggest that loyalty does add market value to an organization. So I guess I'll leave it at that. What are your thoughts to bring us home?
I agree with you there. What I would say is that the case that you were just making is exactly the case that I would make to the CEO, and why I would say that loyalty can't, if you allow it to reside in the marketing area, you're really missing an opportunity. So if you consider like the connected commerce, the unified commerce aspect of loyalty now, that we have to include, you know, cross-functional business leads across an entire enterprise to really make it work correctly. And then you're building value in a very special part of your customer portfolio. Hopefully that becomes the majority of your overall customer portfolio. But if that's the goal, and you're also telling your shareholders that you intend to become a customer-centric business, then those two things taken together, the sum of the parts really do become more than a single element. So while we know to get through the meeting and survive, we have to be able to put a number on a slide and say, we're going to get X from this program in a certain amount of time, I think that it's really incumbent upon us now to make the bigger case. And I'd rather be making the bigger case and welcome kind of the pushback and have somebody say, why, and have the opportunity to explain why. Because if we limit ourselves just to talking about, well, the loyalty program is going to produce a number, we're missing an opportunity.
I think we're missing the boat. I agree with you 100%.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
So let's tie off there. And thanks so much for your thoughts, Bill. It's glad to be back. We'll be back next month with rewards and redemption experiences as the next take for our course that we're covering in the month of May. So
great topic.
Thank you everyone for sticking with us. And as Bill always says, stay loyal. We'll talk with you soon. Bye now.
Okay. All right. Bye, everyone.
This show is sponsored by Wise Marketeer Group, publisher of The Wise Marketeer, the premier digital customer loyalty marketing resource for industry-relevant news, insights, and research. Wise Marketeer Group also offers loyalty education and training globally through its Loyalty Academy, which has certified nearly 900 marketeers and executives in 49 countries as certified loyalty marketing professionals. For global coverage of customer engagement and loyalty, check out thewisemarketeer.com and become a Wiser Marketeer or subscriber. Learn more about global loyalty education for individuals or corporate training programs at loyaltyacademy.org. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Let's Talk Loyalty. If you'd like us to send you the latest shows each week, simply sign up for the Let's Talk Loyalty newsletter on letstalkloyalty.com, and we'll send our best episodes straight to your inbox. And don't forget that you can follow Let's Talk Loyalty on any of your favorite podcast platforms. And of course, we'd love for you to share your feedback and reviews. Thanks again for supporting the show.